Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Welcome back to the podcast, ladies and gents. I'm so excited to have with me my friend, America's favorite divorce expert, attorney, mediator. She's just an host of the Divorce and Beyond podcast, Susan Guthrie. And Susan posted something really interesting recently on Instagram, which caught my eye, and it was the number one unexpected relationship killer. 46% of divorced couples agree. So of course I was like, what is that? And I started to read the study, and there's some really interesting nuggets in there. So Susan, welcome back to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
I'm so happy to be back, Bella. Thanks so much for having me. And I agree with you. This headline caught my eye as well.
Okay, Susan, tell us. I'm going to hand the mic over to you. Tell us about the data you looked at, the study, and what you found.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was actually yesterday I was scrolling through my news feed and I saw that headline that basically said that 46% of divorced couples say this was the number one cause of conflict in their relationship. And as a divorce attorney for 30 years, I thought I know what I know that, right? I knew what that answer was going to be. But then the rest of the headline said, and it isn't money. And I was like, but wait a minute, that's what I thought it was going to be.
Right.
So of course I had to scroll through, right? People are always fighting about money. But when I scrolled through, I have to say I was very surprised to see what the number one cause of conflict was that these couples cited.
Okay, tell us.
Should we do a drum roll?
No, let's do a drum roll. Dun,
you can do your magic wands and do our drum roll.
Exactly.
So the number one cause of conflict was career choices between the spouses, which I thought was so interesting.
And did they talk about what that means? Is it I'm choosing not to work and you, dear husband, will work? Or is it what I do for work and what he does for work? Like, what did it say? I'm so fascinated.
You know, and I will say it didn't go too deeply into it in the background information. So those are questions that I would have as well. But what it did seem to say is it's an amalgamation of issues. All those things that you just mentioned are a part of this. So it might be part of the situation. And I will tell you, as a divorce attorney, I've seen all of these be a part of the paradigm between a couple that is, you know, really sort of worked at the underpinnings of that relationship. Some of it might be one party is a stay-at-home or lesser earning spouse in order to take care of the family, but that over time starts to cause resentment on the part of the one who's going out and being the breadwinner. I've seen that. I've seen situations, and it sort of alluded to this, where career changes or career choices have brought about lifestyle changes for a family or for a couple. I mean, you know, we were just talking about, I moved to Chicago from beautiful sunny San Diego for my husband's career. And let me tell you, he pays for that sometimes every once in a while, usually during the Chicago winters. But right. So there may be relationship or, issues that have come about as a result of some of the choices that need to be made. But I think it all comes down to really, you know, it's hard to prioritize two careers in one relationship.
No, and that's so true, Susan. I think at Smart Dating Academy, we clearly see people that come out of divorce, or, you know, I can say out of even a breakup, maybe there wasn't an official divorce, but, and then as they get back into the dating world, the question is, who do I look for this time around. And I'll tell you, career choices from my vantage point, right? And you just mentioned you've got a big career. You're an entrepreneur, a podcaster, a public speaker. Your husband is a CEO, C-suite person, right? Two big careers. My husband and I, similar. Two big careers. We've got a 15-year-old and a 19-year-old at home. And what I tell people in this, you can be with anybody. Okay. You can have a big career. He can have a big career. You can both be retired, whatever that is. But are you going to align with each other? And as you're getting into the relationship, understand, how are you going to prioritize each other? How are you both going to feel like you are getting what you want? From my vantage point, I may have to go at the drop of a hat tomorrow to go to New York City to do a show. Andy might have to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma for a 3-day work conference for one of his clients. But for both of us, no matter what the dollar amount has been, and our dollars have changed over the years, there are years he's out-earned me, there are years I've out-earned him. But what we have always vowed to do is support the other person, not necessarily support who's got the bigger paycheck at that moment. And that person becomes more important because, to your point, what does that do? It breeds resentment. As soon as one person becomes more important, you feel like, well, I'm just the less important sidekick. So really having these conversations, how are you going to navigate this, could not be more crucial. So really, at the end of the day, what so much of divorce and breakups, what it's caused by is not anticipating what the issues could be and then communicating about it and using your voice.
Yeah. And, you know, you just used the two words that I think are the most critical in all of this is the anticipating. That's one of the reasons why I posted this study is I think it's really very valuable for people going into relationships, to your listeners right now, to people who your clients at Smart Dating Academy, I know you work with them on this type of awareness of the issues that might arise in relationships. Because you, if you think about these things ahead of time, you can do the next important thing that you mentioned. You can communicate about them. And I will tell you, you know, this survey was really about what causes conflict. Underneath, I think every single one of the things, or at least many of the things that were in that top list of seven reasons that, or seven things that cause conflict, a lot of that comes down to, at its core, poor communication around those issues. So ultimately, maybe communication is really the bottom line. Because when resentment builds, if you're not communicating about that resentment, it continues to grow, right, in these relationships.
Absolutely. And with regard to leapfrog off of your point about communication, the thing that underlies communication is the ethos with which you're looking at your relationship. You are the most important person in my life. You are the lid to my pot, and I want you to be happy, right? And when you look at your partner in that way, your communication and what you want for them also greatly is affected versus just the sheer, I want this and I want this, right? We're so often, that's what we think communication is. But number one, it's looking at your person saying, I really want you to be happy and I want you to be the best version of yourself and I want you to grow. And they want the same for you. So when you look at each other with those lenses, truly, your communication will be much clearer and it's going to result in a win-win because you both want the best for each other, right? It's like, wow, if I've got to go to New York and you've got to go to Tulsa at the same time, can we loop in one of our parents or our nanny? Like, how do we support each other versus frictionalizing something so simple?
Right. And unfortunately, you know, there's that famous book, Difficult Conversations and How to Have Them. People look at these conversations as difficult conversations and they don't have them. They sort of avoid them, or they come at them. I think it's really important what you just said from that I perspective of what I want, as opposed to that I perspective, I want you to be happy. So although it's still I want, the focus is on the other person. And you know, unfortunately, that is a cycle, at least that I have seen as a divorce attorney. So again, I'm seeing relationships that have ended, that have come to a point that could not be saved. They could not be saved, right? Where that lack of communication, that resentment, the conflict, it's an ongoing cycle. It doesn't end. It builds until it gets to that point. And for some couples, it's a short period of time. I just saw something that flashed across my screen that said Britney Spears and her husband are getting a divorce after 13 months of marriage, right? So you might see a short-term marriage. I know it just came across as we were talking here, so I'll throw it out there, right? Short-term. Or I think the longest marriage that I ever handled in my career as a divorce attorney was something along the lines of 48 years, a couple who had been together. But by the time they got to that end point, resentment was a great deal of what I would say. And it, you know, whether it was over career choices or decisions that they had made, there are a number of other reasons for conflict between couples that this study found. But at the very end of it, these were two people who barely knew each other because they hadn't communicated for so much of that time period, 48 years.
Right. And why are we not communicating? That's really the question to get at, right? Somebody feels slighted. We feel less important. We feel hurt. We feel shut out. And so we shut down. So it's mining the reasons underneath to get back to that level of communication. But to your point, you know, I love John Gottman is the famous marriage researcher that looked at couples for years and years in his Seattle love labs and got it down to, I think, within 10 seconds, he could ask a couple, like, tell me about a conflict you have in your marriage. And by watching their body language for 10 seconds, he could predict with 95% accuracy which of those couples would go on to stay married and which would go on to divorce, right? And I think the four horsemen that he talks about are criticism, contempt, defensiveness, yeah, and stonewalling, right? And if you think about that, and in 10 seconds, he can call that. So there are so many feelings that lead to that lack of communication. And Gottman, on this point, Susan, of communication, says something that I find so funny and so accurate. And I'm sure as a long-term married person, you will too. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes communication can be overrated. Like, just agree that there are things that you're going to disagree about. And when you start to go down those dark pathways, Gottman says, have a funny, lighten it up, like stick your tongue out at each other. Like basically that means this is our agree to disagree mode. So let's just not go there. And no, we don't need to communicate about this because we don't see eye to eye. So let's stick to the 90% of stuff that we do agree on. I'm like, I think that's genius. Right.
I love it. And I won't tell you what David and I use as our little symbol, but we double flip the bird at each other and start laughing because that's our, you know, we don't disagree at that level very often, but you're right. Gottman is the, you know, really the gold standard of relationship information besides you. You know, absolutely. And I will tell you the four horsemen of those four, contempt is the one that I have seen most often as a divorce attorney. And it's interesting because in relationships, and I'm thinking of what this survey said about career choices bringing about conflict, contempt or belittling the partner who's not earning as much or who doesn't have the biggest job or whatever that is, comes out as contempt from the one partner to the other. And you know, that made me think of that when you were saying that, because that's what I then see. If I've represented the party who was the bigger breadwinner or the bigger career person, they very much felt they had contempt for the lack of income or lack of importance of the job of their spouse. Meanwhile, they probably made the decision that that person would be a stay-at-home parent or would put their career in a lesser mode, or maybe they were very happy doing something that wasn't as high powered as the other one. But now it shows its contempt.
Right, right, right. And I think, you know, about career choices, and for those of you who are in the dating pool, right, you know, it's like, wow, I'd like my partner to have tons of money and be really successful and not be a workaholic and have good work-life balance. At the end of the day, this is an arena where most likely you're not going to get it all. And there are going to be trade-offs, right? And so how do you think the person got super successful? Not by, you know, a 4-hour work week. Sorry. Right. Yeah. I don't know who the hell that works for, Tim Ferriss, but it certainly doesn't work for me.
I wish it worked.
Right. It sold a hell of a lot of books. That's for sure. Including me. I was like, wow, yeah, no, that didn't work for me. I'm going to go back to the 40-hour work week. Really, right?
You work more than 40 hours. I know you.
Yes, 100%. So it really, you know, you're going to have to choose things. So you may not need as much money as you think you do. You might want someone who makes enough to pay the bills, but can also have dinner with you 5 nights a week and is going to be home and can take trips and can do things and can binge a Netflix series with you and isn't going to be gone 5 days a week traveling every single week, right? I mean, I've been through all these phases with my husband, and I can tell you some of them cause more chaos and tumult to our relationship. So I can tell you, really, as you're out there, think about, wow, what do I want to feel in this relationship this time around? And don't get so caught up in the standard checklists of things that you want. So that's my public service announcement for people that are, as we're talking about career choices, it's really easy to say, yeah, I want the person who's got 2 commas in their salary and blah, blah, blah. But ask yourself, do you want all the entrapments that come with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's making me think of the number one thing you tell me people always ask for on their wish list, and that's someone who's tall. But, you know, tall, a CEO, rich, who's home all the time, except when I don't want them to be, you know.
Exactly. Who's at my beck and call, but still lets me go on girls' weekends, but wants to be with me all day and can just unplug. It's like, wow, that's Disney. That's not real life, right? Yeah. So, and sometimes I think people get caught in relationships with those expectations. It's like, well, he's never home or she's never home. It's like, what did you think was going to happen?
Right.
Did you think things were going to magically change when you got married? No, your problems when you're dating become your problems when you're married.
Except exacerbated, right? Because now you're married and now you might add children into this mix or joint finances or all the other things that we know that can go on that add additional stressors. And I do think that that's something that people, you know, need to be aware of, because we're talking about career choices, but that's the other thing you were talking about, awareness earlier, being aware of, so that you can communicate about these potential causes of conflict. Face it, every relationship, friends, family, spouses, significant others, all relationships are going to experience conflict at some point in time. So having something and having some awareness of what might arise and having put some thought on your own part as to what's a priority and what's important to you, because you're going and talking about it throughout, having that ability to have the open communication about it. Because I was looking at some of the other things on the list here. So number 2 was parenting differences, which I tell this to people all the time, because, you know, when people are going through divorce, they almost never agree on what is in the best interest of their children, right? It seems like such a simple standard, yet they, you know, never do. But the reality is, married couples don't agree on what is best for their children all the time either. You know, so that doesn't surprise me that it's there. But the number 3 one I wanted to touch on, because this is one that I've definitely seen, and it kind of goes back to the career choices, I think. is the division of household labor. That was a biggie, way ahead of finances, way about arguing over money, although maybe that comes into it in the division of household labor. But I think that that one is something that could be talked about and communicated about, and we should be thinking about as we go into relationships as well.
Should I give our listeners the quote I gave you when we yes. were prepping for this? For all of you ladies out there that are listening, I have been known to say for the last decade, right, I'm an ardent feminist, but I say feminism is an ant, right? We now get to work and we get to do all the things we've done domestically for the last thousands and thousands of years. It's been an and. We haven't successfully transitioned those responsibilities and really getting that division of labor. I have so many friends that are double income working families. They, husband works, wife works, or, you know, wife, whatever it is, both partners are working. There are kids at home and it is hard, right? The division of labor, the driving around, the prepping, the cooking, the cleaning, the deep cleaning, right? The thinking about who's going to pay the bills. Oh my God, we need a new car. All of those things. And the couples, a statistic I read a couple of months ago, I couldn't agree with more. And I've been talking about this to our smart daters that are in our VIP coaching at Smart Dating Academy, is the relationships that are predicted to do the best long-term, Susan gets at the point of this study, are more, they called it androgynous. And I don't know if that's a cancelable word right now, but work with me here. Basically, where both people are doing very similar things. They're pulling their weight outside of the home and they're pulling their weight inside of the home. And those will be the happiest long-term relationships going forward.
Yeah. And I had not read that study, but it's making me think of another headline I saw recently, and I'll have to find it, but it was about this concept that is so hardwired into us that women are caregivers and men are the hunters, right? They are the bring home the bacon and women are the caregivers. And people have a belief that that is hardwired into our DNA. And in fact, studies have shown that to not be true at all. And that men are just as able and giving of caregiving as women, and women have just as much ability. But we societally, if I said that correctly, but societally,
we're genderized.
We have genderized this into the little woman and the big strong man sort of concept. And because we are so socialized to it, we actually believe it's in our DNA. We actually believe that it's a part of, you know, if you're a woman, you are a more nurturing, you know, individual. And if you are a man, you are more, you know, I don't know, manly. And so I thought that was truly, you know, a very, very interesting thing, because we buy into it 100% until it doesn't suit us. I also see, you know, at the time of divorce, and I'll say this, and this won't be super positive for some of the women listening, but I always hear this as well at the time of the divorce that, well, I'm the mother. I should have the children with me all of the time. I'm the caretaker. I am the one who should, you know, have them. They should be with me. That's normal. That's natural. That's the way things should be. And when I point out dads are just as capable of nurturing and caring, and maybe it's the societal norms that we're living along with, you know, we get a little bit of pushback on that at the same time. So what you were saying about the feminism, we also play into it to a certain degree. I mean, we have to have our realizations that, yes, we can rail against it, but we've also played into it a certain bit. We don't get to be the caregiver and then complain about being the caregiver, perhaps. If you know what I mean? Am I making any sense?
No, perfectly. And I think society also rewards us, and yet repudiates us for doing it. So I think that there's so many gender politics and dynamics behind this, but I love the fact that it's not built into us. We're not wired for certain things. We might have a uterus and can build a baby and then birth the baby. And we've got more oxytocin, which is the attachment hormone, right? Which makes us not throw our babies out of the window and, you know, do those kinds of things. But I think long term, you're exactly right. And I couldn't agree with your data more, right? Like, I'm the harder parent to some extent with more rules, more, you know, boundaries on money and curfews. And Andy is more the soft teddy bear that they will go to, like, can I have $50 because I really want to do this. And I'm like, wait a second, that's coming out of your account. So at the end of the day, you can say, is that nurturing or is that not nurturing at the end of the day? Right. And that's my right. DNA. Like, you say you're going to do this. This is what you're going to do, period. Right. So, and he's the softer one. So, and I don't think he was genderized to be that way, nor was I genderized to be this way. So I agree with your observation in the headline that you read, that a lot of this is you are who you are, you do you, boo, and pick a partner that complements who you are ultimately, right? It's not about tall and sexy and who's making what kind of money. There's way bigger things at play here. And I know, you know, we've got people know us and we've got all sorts of rules, right? There's a 15 date rule and there's exclusivity and we're going to have a dating funnel. Now, why do we do all of that? People, it's for precisely these reasons. We are kicking the tires and helping you to ask the questions that you don't know how to ask, or you might not even want to ask them. And we're going, no, you're going to ask this question right now, right? And really helping to say, is this partner going to be good for me long term? Are we aligned? Do we want the same things? Do we value each other in the ways we want to be valued? That's what partner selection, and that's what dating should ultimately bring you.
Yeah. You know, and you just said something that I think is really, really important, because you said we help people ask the questions, and people may be taking that as you give them the questions to ask the potential significant other. But I think one of the most valuable things that I know that you do is they actually give them the questions to ask themselves, like you just did right there, right? That's what the magic of Bella Gandhi and the Smart Dating Academy is, right? That I don't know that people truly understand, is this isn't all about how to make yourself look pretty to a potential mate or attract somebody. It is truly about getting to know yourself at that granular level and getting to know this potential spouse or potential, you know, significant other. In a way that, because you know yourself so well and you've gotten to know them that well, you know whether those two are going to be able to come together. And that's the beauty, really. It is.
It is. And it's the most important thing you can do is, to Susan's point, know yourself, know what you want, and then have the courage to ask the questions. This reminds me of the story of one of my best friends who we went at my own wedding. She had been dating this guy. She was a bridesmaid in my wedding, one of my two childhood best friends. And she had been dating a guy for a year and a half who was a few years older than us. And he was super into playing soccer, right? He played soccer at his little Milwaukee college and played pickup games. And so she's in my wedding giving a speech. The day before the wedding, he says to her, you know what? I'm not going to be able to go to the wedding. We decided the guys are going to play soccer tomorrow. And I was like, hold up. He just left you dateless at your best friend's wedding, which has been on the calendar for months. So That was a giant red flag for me. So now, a year later, right, waving NASCAR red flag. So a year later, I'm married. Our other best friend is now engaged. And my girlfriend is crying, going, I don't know. I don't know where this is going. And I said, I want you to ask him one question. And she's like, anything. Mind you, we are 27 years old. I said, ask him, are you going to marry me? She's like, well, I'm sure he would. I said, I want you to ask him this question tonight. And I want you to call me as soon as you ask him the question. Susan, she called him, asked him the question, are you going to marry me? They had been together for over 3.5 years. And he looked at her and he said, no. That weekend, I got a pickup truck. My two best friends, Andy, we went and we moved her out of his apartment while she was at work. She came home, looked at us. All of her stuff was packed up. We had told her parents we were bringing her back home to Libertyville. She looked at us. She cried. We had pizza. We put her back in the truck. She is now happily married and has two daughters, one of whom is going to Indiana with my daughter. So yay. I will tell you, the right questions are crucial. And this was far before I started Smart Dating Academy. In fact, she was one of the ones who was like, you need to do this and teach people how to do this, because I could have waited forever, but you made me ask the question that I didn't have the courage to ask. And then you made me act on it. She's like, you moved me out, basically.
If you don't remember, your pickup truck was involved.
Right, ladies and gentlemen. So if you need this kind of help, we're full service at Smart Dating Academy, pickup truck and all. Just kidding. But really, asking the right question, that was in our 20s. Ask the questions today. Okay. Think of what you want and don't be afraid. And if you need help at sussing out how to do this in a relationship that you're in, for God's sake, there are so many people out there. Schedule a session with me, go to our website, sign up, listen to podcast episodes, but don't stew in this. And most importantly, don't have to do this on your own anymore. There are resources. Listen to Susan, her podcast, the Divorce and Beyond podcast, is phenomenal. Susan is a recent breakout television star as well. You can see her on the National News Nation show if you tune in, and she's an amazing wealth of information. Tune back into our podcast. Sign up for our newsletter. Go to smartdatingacademy.com. Fill out any form. Get with it, you guys. Take the power that you have inside of you to know yourself, to know what you want in dating, to know what you need, to know how you want to feel, and do something beautiful for yourself today. So until next week, I bid you farewell and give you tons of psychotic optimism in that pickup truck I rented for my girlfriend. So if you need it, consider that pickup truck of psychotic optimism. It just landed in your driveway. So we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.